innocent until proven, and things like that, you know. Okay, Richard Day here at WTOP in Washington. Let me switch us on to the computer. We'll go from the telephone to the computer.
Okay.
It'll take about 5 seconds or so. Hold on. All right. That should be done. Are you there, Steve?
I'm here.
Okay, very good. Level on us. All right, we're recording now, Steve. You know, James Ellroy has made almost a career out of the Black Dahlia murder case, transferring his mother's own murder into that one and writing several other novels since then. Now you did the Black Dahlia for real in your previous book.
Exactly.
And you extend that kind of thing to a lot of other cases.
Yes. It just came out today. In fact, the gag order was lifted by my Dutton, my publisher, and I'm able to talk for the first time today, so you're hearing it right off the press here. Basically, my book came out, and you mentioned Ellroy, you know, the old saying, truth is far stranger than fiction. It's certainly applicable to this story. Black Dahlia Avenger came out in 2003. I did that book, and it became a national bestseller and a lot of controversy and stuff. And ultimately, that four-year investigation led me to the conclusion and the compiling of evidence that my father committed the L.A.'s most heinous crime, the Elizabeth Short, 22-year-old Elizabeth Short, the Black Dahlia. And I presented that information to the DA's office, to Steve Kay, head deputy DA, active then, and he reviewed all of the evidence for a month, came back, said, case solved. Dr. George Hill Hodell, your father, did in fact commit the Black Dahlia murder and a second murder known as the Lipstick Murder in Los Angeles that occurred about a couple of weeks after that. At that point, that blew open the secret safe, the safe with the secret documents and files, and we discovered all along that George Hodell was the prime suspect in the investigation back in 1947. So that kind of went from there. They created a lot of interest in that kind of Ellroy's book, The Fictional Story, which, of course, is quite different, you know, got a lot of attention based on the renewed interest in the Dahlia, and that was made into a film. I haven't seen it, but I know it was made, but that's a whole different story. It has nothing to do with the real story.
Did your father keep any notes or records about what he did?
Well, he didn't, not specifically about his crimes, but we have a lot of notes and handwriting analysis and stuff that connect him to the crimes. And there was a whole bunch of evidence, and you know, basically the DA's office put up a five-week surveillance of our home back then in 1940 and 1950, actually. And got him to confess. Basically, he confessed on tape to, he made a statement, they'll never be able to prove I did the Dahlia murder. He talks about payoffs to law enforcement. He talks about abortions, on and on. But that, you know, you got to understand, back then, that was a real-life L.A. Confidential. I mean, it was a very different department in 1947 than it is now. And half the department was corrupt. So they had a whole bunch of reasons. Dad got tipped off. He was about to be arrested by the DA's investigators, got tipped off, split from the country, left, literally with the microphones in the wall. So they shut it down, sealed it off, and he went to Asia and reinvented himself as a market researcher. But, you know, to understand this story and where we're going and where we've been, you really kind of have to understand George Hodell and this remarkable man who was, in every respect, a Renaissance man. You know, 7-year-old at age seven, he's doing playing his own piano concerts at the Shrine Auditorium in L.A. At 14, he's at Caltech, 186 IQ, 1 point above Einstein. He becomes a crime reporter for the local Los Angeles newspapers, rides around with LAPD homicide. He goes on to Caltech at 15. Impregnates a professor's wife. She becomes pregnant. He's asked to leave. He goes to medical school in San Francisco, Berkeley, at pre-med and then San Francisco and on. So you've got, you know, he comes back to Hollywood, starts doctoring to the rich and famous, marries my mother, who was married to John Huston, the film director, and lots of interesting people, buys a Frank Lloyd Wright house in Hollywood, on, and ultimately becomes the head of L.A. County Health Department. And he's also a surgeon, you know, the story, all of that's in book one. And then basically we present all of it, and book two began, about 4 years ago. I started looking, you know, a lot of my readers said, well, you know, he left the country. Do you think he stopped killing? And, of course, as you know, and most of your listeners know, you know, serial killers just don't quit. They're either arrested or they go to jail for some other crime or they die. So that's what started me into looking at book two.
Yeah, book two. After book one, this was even more disturbing than just one singular murder case. Did you understand your father? Did you change your mind about how you felt about him?
Well, as far as how I felt about him, you know, that's been a progression of in the last 10 years. I've been through every possible emotion you can think of, from initial anger to guilt to, you know, and now it's really come out after the revelations in book two, which is basically connecting him and identifying him and making a very compelling case that he was, in fact, Zodiac, the San Francisco Bay Area serial killer. You know, right now, it's a tremendous sadness. I mean, it's the realization that we've been dealing with a very, very sick and twisted mind. And, you know, that's kind of where I think I'm going to be left off with this for the rest of my life is, you know, we're looking at a real life Jekyll and Hyde here. And the linkage, you know, between in the new book is very dramatic and very compelling. There's lots of different things that connect him, not only to crimes in the Bay Area, to the Zodiac crimes, but also some earlier crimes in Chicago and one in Asia, which was their version of the Black Dahlia. It was a copycat where a young woman was cut in half in Manila, about a mile from his office, and posed in a vacant lot.
Was there one singular motive for all of these crimes?
Well, the motive is interesting that you ask, because really what we do in book two is we go into his mind. I realized I had to understand his crimes. And to get some answers, I had to actually go in and become and think like he did. And that's what happened, and that's a very scary, dark place to be, let me tell you, in that mind. But because I did that, I understood his thinking and his rationale. And basically, he was a nihilist. He was, not only was he congenitally insane, but he was also, you know, there's surrealism is connected to it. There was this huge, giant ego, megalomaniac. He was, you know, he felt that he could do no wrong and there were no laws. And he was a misogynist. He was a misanthrope. He was all of these things that created this monster. And he was also what you call, what the modern, I guess, diagnosis is DID, dissociative identity disorder, which is the old term we used to call, you know, multiple personalities. And he was that. He was a Jekyll and Hyde.
Hmm. And like the TV show, a true criminal mind.
A true criminal mind and a real-life Hannibal Lecter. I mean, here he was a psychiatrist, and he was an international serial killer. He was based in Manila, and he would come to San Francisco 3-4 times at least a year, traveling through to Los Angeles, to New York, and then back. And he would commit these crimes, get on a jumbo jet, fly back to a safe haven in Manila. And, you know, what really got me turned on to it was the initial, you know, of course, I didn't know that much about Zodiac in the Bay Area, because even though I was working at Homicide at the time, we had our hands full with a guy named Charlie Manson. So I just knew the overview on Zodiac. But when I started researching it and really looking at it about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the first thing I got was a composite, and it was just incredible. I mean, it was almost picture perfect to George Hodel. And I'd always thought Zodiac was a younger guy, like in his, you know, 20s or 30s, because Dad was 59 at the time of the murders, and I thought, you know, never wouldn't even consider him as a possible suspect. But the police composite had his age to 35 to 45, and some of the witnesses said it was probably the high end of that. Well, Dad looked, was 59, but looked 45. So when you look at the, you know, the two side by side, it's like almost picture perfect. So that really got my attention, and that's what started me on the investigation.
Yeah. Well, it's chilling hearing what you have to say about it, and I can't wait to read what must be a fascinating book about such appalling acts.
Yeah, ultimately, it's going to come down to DNA, and I'm sure they'll have it, and I think we'll be able to get a definitive answer.
Okay. Well, great. I'm glad I got in touch with you, Steve. It's, as I said, fascinating. And I thank you so much.
Okay, good to be with you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Your line is open.